The San Jose Sharks Audio Network is on 24 hours a day. Whether you're in the office or on the go, make sure that you download the Sharks SAP Center app and hit listen anytime. You can also find us on your computer by going to sjsharks.com/listen. If it's a game broadcast, breaking news, or a player feature, the place to find it is right here on the San Jose Sharks Audio Network.
We're getting you ready for the game on The Buildup with news from around the league, interviews, highlights, and more. Here's your host, Ted Ramey.
All right, what's happening, everybody? We are getting ready for game two of the Sharks' four-game road trip, three of which are in the New York metropolitan area. Tonight, it's against the New York Rangers, 0-4-0 at home up to this point of the season. We do see that Tim Liljegren is slotting back into the lineup for San Jose. He'd been dealing with a little bit of a neck issue, and so that means Sam Dickinson is coming out. And the word is that Alex Nedeljkovic will be in net for San Jose. So a little bit of rest for Dickinson. Hopefully we'll see him back in the lineup on Friday nights when they are going to be taking on the Devils. But the sleepover line is the top line. Second line, Eklund, Wenberg, Skinner. Third line, Graf, Misa, Gaudette. Fourth line, Gaudreau, Delandria, and Reeves. The defensive pairings, Letty, Iorio, Orlov, Liljegren, Ferraro, Desharnais, and like I said, Ned seems to be the man first off the ice and will be getting the start in net tonight for San Jose. Now we're going to change gears and get into everything about the Rangers, tonight's opponent, and a little bit on the Sharks with Colin Stevenson, who covers the Rangers for Newsday. Colin, what's going on, man? How are you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm doing, we're covering a team that hasn't won a game at home and has scored one goal in four games at home. So, it's fun.
It is, and in some ways there's some parallels to the hand-wringing that's going on with Sharks fans right now. But before we get into the nitty-gritty of what you've seen this year with New York, what do you think happened last year, and has the team been able to fully move on from it given how many changes there have been, whether it's talking about a head coach or a captain or wherever you want to go with it? Is it enough to disrupt from what happened and kind of change the course that they were on?
I think for the most part, yes. When Chris Drury took over the team in 2021, he essentially kept the core of the team together for the next 4 years or whatever. And I guess what they learned in 2024 when they lost to Florida was they had a good team, just not good enough to beat Florida. And so I think Chris wanted to change things up a little bit. He also had some cap trouble. Mm-hmm. And the way he went about it, I think, didn't sit well with the players. I mean, he made changes before, not player-related changes, but within the organization changes, getting rid of a lot of people just because. And I think, a lot of that didn't sit well with players. And then last year, I think, when he got rid of Barclay Goodrow, I think that was the first one. That was clearly a cap salary cap thing. Mm-hmm. But kind of the way they did it didn't sit well with the players. I mean, I know, you guys, I'm sure you've talked to Barclay about it. I mean, like his complaint was he didn't know that this was going to happen. And he kind of got a call a few minutes before and, he didn't like that. And he was a very popular guy in the room.
Yeah.
Jacob Trouba, obviously, the stuff that went down with him, I guess his play had slipped. And he was a big salary and, they did want to try and, create some space to maybe bring in a free agent or two. But it was just very clumsy and awkward, what they were doing with Trouba. I mean, and they weren't able to get rid of him over the summer. And it was always going to be awkward with him coming back. Obviously it didn't last very long. So I think that those two particularly really, really rankled the locker room. After that, time's gone on. And I think the guys that are here that went through that last year understand that they – that can't happen again. The season was bad. It went south actually on the same Western Canada trip that they're about to go on tomorrow. And you know, sort of there was a you know, there was just like a dark cloud over the team the whole season. And I think the guys that survived that, for lack of a better term, realize that they just can't do that again. Now, Chris Drury has you know, done some things a little bit differently. I mean, he wanted to move on from Chris Kreider, and was able to do so, but he did it in the summer. You know, from Kreider's own account, Chris was Kreider, that is, was in the loop on all of this stuff, and really understood what was going on and what was, you know, where, you know, had a say and where he was going and all that. Same thing with Keandre Miller. I think, you know, they knew that they wanted to go get Vlad Gavrikov, and they weren't going to be able to get Gavrikov and keep Keandre Miller. So, you know, I mean, he didn't have a great year last year, Keandre, and so I think, you know, they let him in on it, you know, and he was aware of what was going on, and he ended up in a really good spot for himself, and got paid and everything. So I think that's kind of mended some fences a little bit. So I do think that most of that stuff is gone. The question is now, how good is the roster? You know what I mean? Because they did upgrade their first line center position when they got JT Miller, but in order to get him, they had to trade Filip Hedl, who's injured now, but Hedl had been a really great third line center for them. So they weakened themselves at third line center in order to upgrade at first line center. And so, you know, there are holes on the roster. And so that's where we're trying to figure out whether the roster is good enough to get them where they want to go.
What do you make of the offense up to this point, which obviously has included some home deficiencies?
So I think that, you know, and they'll admit that their home opener, they got shut out by Pittsburgh, which was not expected, right? I mean, Pittsburgh's a rebuilding team right now. Sullivan's old team, Mike Sullivan's old team. So that, you know, there were a lot of emotions there, and they just did not play well. They kind of laid an egg. But the next two games they played at home, they played great and should have won. And they didn't score a goal, and they got shut out in both of those games. And you know, the mantra after those games had been, you know, listen, we're playing great. We played great. We just didn't score. If we keep doing these things, the goals will come. We'll be fine. The last home game they played against Minnesota on Monday, not so good, right? And so I don't know where they stand in terms of offense. Now, they've also lost Vincent Trocheck, an upper body injury. I won't necessarily speculate as to what that might be, but it's been a couple weeks now. He's not skating. So, you know, let your imagination wander, if you will. But the point is, he's not there, and that's left a big hole in their top six forward group. They've addressed it by moving Mika Zibanejad, you know, who had been their number one center all those years. He had been moved to the right wing to play with JT Miller, and they moved him back to center to take Trocheck's spot. And that's been fine. I mean, Mika's played great. And I think he'd been a little snake bit in terms of, you know, just having, you know, running into some bad luck and some hot goalies. And, you know, he had a million shots. I mean, a couple shots that you thought absolutely have to be a goal and then somehow weren't because the goalie made a tremendous save. But he's played great. And, you know, now you're looking at, though, without Trocheck, you have a guy like Connor Sheary, who came to camp on a professional tryout, and he's playing in your top six, because you move Zibanejad from right wing on JT Miller's line to center Trocheck spot, and now Sheary goes into where Zibanejad was, and I don't know that that's optimal, you know. So I, you know, they have some struggles personnel wise, and as I said, you know, they had a couple of really, really good games against Washington that they should have won, against Edmonton that they probably should have won. They went to Toronto, played really well, lost in overtime, finally won at Montreal, and thought that they had turned it around, and came home and didn't play well against Minnesota. So I guess all of that is to say that the jury is still out on what they have offensively. They're not getting production from guys like Alexis Lafreniere, Will Cooley. These are young guys that are playing in the top six that, you know, each of them only has one goal. And, you know, goals have been hard to come by for everybody, but, you know, those two guys need to produce. Otherwise, you know, this isn't going to work. So, you know, we're eight games in. You know, they've been fine on the road, but they've also not played the toughest schedule on the road either. Mm-hmm. They played Pittsburgh away. They played Buffalo away. They played Montreal away and, you know, caught them. I don't know what happened in that game, quite honestly. But, you know, it hasn't been like, you know, they haven't played, you know, the real big boys in the league yet. And right now they're 3-4-1. So, you know, we don't know.
What do you think about Igor Shesterkin up to this point? Last year he had a high in goals against average. You know, his save percentage was down, I believe a career low for him as well, to, you know, juxtapose with that career high in goals against average. How much of that do we put on the team around him, or was he maybe just trying to do too much of it on his own last year, feeling that he maybe needed to?
Well, you know, it's interesting that you put it that way. Yes, clearly the team in front of him was deficient in playing defense. You know, they gave up way too many rush chances. They weren't great at clearing the front of the net. And so, yeah, some of Igor's numbers are directly attributable to bad defense in front of him. But I, you know, at the same time, I also think he wasn't as good last year as he had been previously. And I think a lot of that came after he signed the contract, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, he started last year in the last year of his contract, and there was a negotiation, and he signed the contract. I think, you know, the day that Jacob Trouba got traded, the Rangers signed Igor Shesterkin to a big money contract, you know, most ever for a goalie, second highest paid player on the team. And I don't know that Igor was quite the same after that. Having said all that, he's been absolutely brilliant this year. Yes, the team is playing much better defense under Mike Sullivan. They've changed their system from a man to man, you know, players all talked about in training camp, you know, they've gone from a man to man in the defensive zone to a zone. And players, needed to, you know, get accustomed to that, used to that, figure it all out. But they are playing great defensively, but also Igor Shesterkin has been amazing. And Jonathan Quick's been good too in a couple of games that he's played.
How has it been with Sullivan so far? You know, he's a guy who I've been able to talk to over the years, done some interviews with him. Obviously, you know, very, very interesting guy. He knows how to get it done in the NHL, but he is a forceful personality.
Yeah. I have to say he's been great. He's been great so far. Now we're eight games in. It's 10% of the season. We got 90% of the season to go. We'll see. But he's been absolutely great with us so far. You know, he actually answers questions. I mean, he explains mm-hmm. things. And he's, you know, from a reporter's perspective, he's been something of a godsend. And you know, look, I first started covering the team right at the start of the rebuild, right? In 2018, I came on. So I got the tail end of Alain Vigneault. And then they hired David Quinn because they were in a rebuild mode. They wanted a developmental coach. They hired David Quinn. Mm-hmm. And I thought David Quinn was great, you know, with the media. I mean, again, explaining stuff and just not treating you like you were the enemy and stuff like that. And Sullivan has been the same way. Now, they haven't lost three in a row yet. So, you know, we'll see. We'll see if he gets testy when things get a little tougher than they have been. But for now, we love him.
What is the perspective of the Sharks? I know that out here, they're obviously off to another poor start, 0-4-2, but obviously that's not wildly unexpected because they're still deep in a rebuild and lacking talent. But I'm always curious of the perspective from the outside because I know that I'm right in the thick of it. It's hard for me to see the forest because I got all these darn trees in the way, Colin. And, yeah. You know, yeah. I'm just curious how it looks from the outside.
Well, I'm wondering, you know, I'm wondering if they can't speed up this rebuild somehow. I mean, you know, I've seen, you know, Macklin Celebrini play and the guy's special, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, I know that they were probably hoping to get that number one pick again. And they didn't. They got the two pick and got Michael Mesa. I saw him one of his games, the first game he played. I didn't see the Islander game. And I don't really know what the plan is with him in terms of how they're going to bring him along. How many games is he going to play? How are they going to use him? Mm-hmm. I'm curious, though. Like, you know, one of the things that the Rangers did in their rebuild, and I would think that Mike Greer would have learned all of this from Chris Drury when he, you know, the 1 year he was working with Drury. One of the things the Rangers did was, you know, Jeff Gorton said, listen, you can't throw all young guys out there. You got to have some veteran guys. And, you know, so the question is, does San Jose have a chance to win on any given night? And that's the question that I would have because, you know, yes, it's great to have all this young talent, but if they get used to losing, mm-hmm. you know, if they start developing bad habits, you know, guys leaving the zone early, because, you know, we're going to lose 5-1, but I'm going to get my one. you know, those are bad habits, and you need true pros to, you know, kind of, you know, take care of that and make sure that that doesn't happen. Now, you know, I know Barkley Goodrow, I know Ryan Reeves, those guys played for the Rangers. But I, you know, I question the makeup of the roster, and, you know, so, you know, there's questions there. I mean, like, you know, how long is this rebuild supposed to take exactly?
No, it is a good question. And, you know, one of the things that I've kind of bandied about with just some other people is the idea of if another slow start gets off the way that it did last year, where they didn't win till their 10th game of the year, or the year prior where it went double digits before they won their first game. You know, does Mike Greer do something in terms of a trade to maybe shake things up, send a message, or actively try to work some prospects to bring in more talent just so he doesn't get the guys stuck in that mindset of losing? And I'm not trying to be mean here, but people always say you don't want to turn into Buffalo. You don't want to turn in to the Raiders. You don't want to, you know, and you can go on and on with these teams that have been mired in, you know, mostly losing territory. And, you know, again, I'm not trying to pick on anyone. I think it's a valid concern, but other people have said, like, well, if he does something like that, it might look panicked. And I'm kind of like, I don't know. I mean, this team isn't supposed to contend this year. They're supposed to improve. To me, that would be a we're supposed to improve type mood. Am I looking at it the wrong way?
I mean, I think, though, it's super tricky because, you know, I mean, if you get the first pick overall again,
right,
that's not a bad thing. So, I mean, you know, I mean, I get the sense that they really are. Yeah, I don't want to use the T word, but I get the sense that they wouldn't mind having that first pick or the second pick in the draft again next year. So I just wonder, I mean, at some point you got to bottom out and you got to turn that corner. And I just wonder when that's going to be for the Sharks.
Colin, I'll let you go, man, but I appreciate your time. This has been a great discussion. Thank you. And I'm sure I'll bug you again soon. All right, man.
Oh, anytime. I'm here for you, man.
Colin Stephenson, great dude there covering the Rangers for Newsday in New York. And yeah, for the Sharks, I think you want to see a lot of what you got the other night in the game against the Islanders. I did not mind much about that game. I thought that Askarov, even though there are four goals on the board, I didn't really fault him for all but one of them. And even then, I don't really think it's, you know, all on him. I think the way the Sharks came out of the gate looked good. They played hard. I think that one of the things they need to work on is not surrendering a goal immediately after scoring a goal. That happened. They went up 1-0 on a penalty kill, gave up a power play goal to make it 1-1, and then gave up a goal shortly thereafter to make it 2-1. You have got to make sure that when the game affords you an opportunity to take control, that you take control of that game. The other part of this is that, you know, bright lights, big city, you would like to see at MSG, Macklin Celebrini, Michael Mesa, Will Smith, these guys coming up big. Colin Graf, you know, it means a lot to him, obviously. You look at a Tyler Toffoli, all these guys, they know how historic of a venue this is to play in, and it would be nice to continue the troubles for what the Rangers are going to be going up against. And, you know, the flip side of that is that you hope the Rangers aren't going to be going up against a team and thinking, okay, this is where we get right. This is where we rectify the troubles we've had at home and our offensive troubles, and if we do that, we'll get it rolling, because this Rangers team is very, very talented, no doubt about it. But you know, the Sharks have got their work cut out for them in this game, as do the Rangers. Neither will be going down without a fight. So, you know, I'm looking for a big win number one this year for San Jose coming out of this Rangers game. I think it's a winnable game. Let's see if they can do it. We're out of time. Pre-game 3:30, go time 4 o'clock, Sharks at the Rangers. For the San Jose Sharks, I'm Ted Ramey, signing off.
This podcast can be found on demand anytime on the Sharks Plus SAP Center app. All music by Yogi Yend.
Spectacular shot off an Orlov head.